This July, we celebrate the birth of our nation and remember the heroes who fought for our freedoms. But did you know there are Americans today who don't have the freedom of life and liberty? Every day, unborn babies' very lives are under attack. But because of preborn, we can rescue them.
I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
Ultrasounds save lives. And when you save a life at a preborn network clinic, you often save a soul, as over 85,000 women have come to know Christ. To learn more about preborn's life-saving work, call #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us here on the program. AFR, American Family Radio, AFR.net. If you would like to subscribe to the podcast, we would greatly appreciate that. You can find the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts out there. And click the subscribe button or the follow button, and the program will be queued up in your library each and every day. Proverbs chapter 21 is where we have been this week, looking at verse 3. To do righteousness and justice is desired by the Lord more than sacrifice. To do righteousness and justice is desired by the Lord more than sacrifice. And as I mentioned on Monday, this is, coming. Well, it's written in the context of the law, of the Jewish law, and the Jewish culture and tradition and tenets of sacrifice, of animal sacrifice specifically, for the remission of sins. And we know that as New Testament believers, the ultimate sacrifice was given through Jesus for the ultimate final remission of sins. And that's the way in which we receive salvation today. But in this context, in Psalms chapter 21, or Proverbs rather, 21, this was still under the law, under the Jewish law. And so the audience here very much understood this struggle between leaning and trusting too much on the sacrifice and becoming kind of not as much focused on living righteous and just lives. And so the writer here is just highlighting the fact that we don't need to abuse God's grace. We don't need to abuse His remission. Instead, we need to focus and strive on living godly lives with the understanding that at times we're going to fall short because of our fallen nature. So the Lord desires righteousness and justice more than sacrifice. That's Proverbs chapter 21, verse 3. Well, I want to cover the Washington, D.C. Crime problem that President Trump's been highlighting in recent days. I just want to help us understand how we got here, because if we don't properly understand how we got here, we'll miss the whole point of this situation and the meaning of it. Democrats have been in charge of America's inner cities for decades. That's a broad statement, I know. It's not technically correct in every city, but in your major metropolitan cities with population counts over a million Democrats have been running the show for decades, 50 plus years, really. We can look at use cases. We can look at cases, real life examples of Detroit, of Chicago, of Minneapolis, of Los Angeles, of Atlanta, and the list goes on of these major metropolitan areas that have been run nearly exclusively by Democrat mayors. And then if you look at the city council breakdown, it's not much different. Majority Democrat control for a long, long time. There's some rare outliers. One of them, because I did some research on this, is Jacksonville, Florida. I don't know what the makeup is now, but there's been some Republican control of Jacksonville, Florida. But everywhere else, like, that was the only outlier when I started looking up this data. That was the only major outlier that I could find in a major metropolitan area that wasn't run by Democrats. And Democrats run these cities into the ground. And this is not an exaggeration. This is not hyperbole. This is quite literally what has happened before our eyes. This is historical fact. Democrats take over, whether they take over as Marxist and hardcore radicals, or whether they take off, or whether they take control by couching themselves as centrist or a moderate or a working class candidate, whatever, however they get to power, it varies. But the end result of Democrat leadership is nearly unanimously across the board, the end result is the destruction of America's inner cities. And we, once again, we don't have to theorize or read sophisticated research papers or have a PhD in anything to understand this reality. You just go to Chicago. You just go to Washington, D.C. You drive in Detroit and see the rundown districts, the manufacturing base that was bled dry in Detroit, the crime, poverty, etc. It's a disaster, and it's an undeniable fact. So there's nobody that I'm aware of is disputing the facts that these cities have become a very sad place to be, very sad place to live. And they were once booming areas, and now they're not. And the common denominator is that Democrats have been in control for a long, long time. I think this is the lesson that we come away with regarding the District of Columbia, which I don't think it ever should have been handed over to the locals. I don't think it ever should have been handed over, meaning trying to create this local government with a mayor and a city council, etc., and a metropolitan police department. I just don't think it makes sense. I'm not talking legally, constitutionally. I'm not even looking back at what the founding fathers thought about this, because there was extensive debate about this even back in the days of our founding of our country on how to constitute this federal city. I'm just telling you, practically speaking, it doesn't make any sense for this to be under the control of anyone or any authority other than fully the federal government. It's a federal city. It's really not that big. Geographically, it's really not that big. And the bulk of the city is occupied with the federal government. Not only residents, but all the buildings. I mean, this is a federal city 101. And so with that being said, in the size of the federal government, we don't need to pretend to have this local, you know, mayor and city council and this local police department. That just doesn't even make sense. The federal government has its hands in anything and everything under the sun around this country and around the world And but they want to relegate the control of the federal city to some local municipality. It doesn't even make sense. So I don't know how we got here. I'm not an expert on the history, but I'm just telling you the way it's set up now just doesn't make sense. When you look at it on paper, it's like, why on earth are we doing this? And the fact that the president can come in and Congress can come in and assume control again just proves the point. It just proves the point. But Washington, D.C. is another one of those examples of Democrats running a city into the ground. Washington, D.C. has become very unsafe, and I go there very frequently. And the homeless encampments are all over the major parkway there in Washington, D.C., right on the other side of the Potomac, technically in Virginia, and then across the Potomac into D.C. proper. Homeless encampments all over the place, shootings every night, armed robberies. Remember we had the Democrat DNC staffer back, this goes back 7 years ago or more, gunned down in the street in the middle of the night. And then there's case after case after case of how dangerous Washington, D.C. Murders are and how dangerous Washington, D.C. is. And this is not just anecdotal or rhetoric. President Trump and his administration have put out the hard numbers on how Washington, D.C. Murder rate per capita is higher than even some of these far, far away foreign cities in these and even other continents. I mean, this is undisputable. And MSNBC's Joe Scarborough, I don't have the clip, but I've got the story. He even admitted on live television that President Trump's right. He basically said that Democrats in Washington, D.C. know this is a problem. I'm talking about congressmen and congresswomen. They know this is a problem. They don't feel safe in Washington, D.C. And privately, they're glad that President Trump took this move to assume control of law enforcement activities in the District of Columbia. But what is so baffling to me, and I just can't get my mind around it, unless I go down this path of cynicism and you know, kind of theorizing about people's motives and intentions here, I don't know why this is controversial. Maybe not the federalizing of the police force. We can have maybe there's some legal debates there about whether this is a good idea or not, even though I fully support it and I think it's 100% legal. I don't know why protecting our cities is controversial. That's what I'm talking about. And the Democrats have created this environment where the criminals get off easy. That's a fact. I mean, you look at the reforms, and even we'll play some clips on the specific criminal reforms, criminal law reforms that took place in Washington, D.C. to set the stage for it to be the most unsafe city in the country. But it's just it's bizarre that this is a hill to die on for a major political party in our country. Why did protecting America's cities become a Republican right-wing talking point? It's so bizarre. And I really still don't understand it. I understand a lot of other things. I understand why they want an open border, flood the country with millions of foreigners who don't share our values, take our jobs. Ultimately, they want them to become Democrat voters through amnesty. Okay, that kind of makes sense. I don't agree with it. It's exceedingly wicked, but I understand the human sinful scheming going on here and the political strategy. And then you can look at the welfare state that we have and why Democrats are all in favor of the welfare state, because they want to get more voters on the government dole so they can become more reliant on Democrat politicians sending them money, free money, right? I get that. That makes sense from a just a rational standpoint. why that would be, how they want to position themselves politically with the voting bloc. But what their obsession is with going, taking it easy on criminals, it's just bizarre. And yes, I know, if you get into Marxism and you get into Alinsky and you look at how bad actors bring down a nation, well, this is how they do it. And so maybe it's all part of their master plan. I don't know. But from a political vantage point, absolutely makes zero sense. Who would raise their hand and say, we want unsafe cities? Please bring the unsafe cities to our backyard. Said no.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us. We do have the video up live on Facebook, At The Core on Facebook. You can also go to stream.afa.net and create a free account. Stream.afa.net and create a free account. All right, let's jump into some clips here. I want to set this up with the newly sworn in U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, Jeanine Pirro, former judge and former prosecutor. Here she is talking about what the city council has done in order to make it easier for hardcore criminals to be released quickly after being arrested and released quickly after even being sentenced, not just indicted, but found guilty by a jury pled guilty and then sentenced to prison based on crimes, on convicted crimes. Here she's talking about how easy it is for the criminals to get out and become repeat offenders. Clip two.
Here's the problem. Assuming that they're 17 years, older than 17 years old, I can get the case. If they're under 18 years of age, I can only get the case if it's murder, rob one, rape, even if they shoot a gun but don't kill you, I can't get it. So the law has to be changed. As the president said, cashless bail, that has to be changed. All right, then even assuming I get the case, I get jurisdiction, I get a conviction, the DC council has given the judges the ability to give probation on shootings. And so then it's up to them. All of these things, the Youth Rehabilitation Incarceration Reduction Act, and now they want to seal records. So if we work hard, we get a conviction, they want to wipe it out. So that needs all to be changed.
All right, well, there you have it. That's a newly sworn in U.S. Attorney Jeanine Pirro. So those are enactments. Those are laws, if you will, or ordinances, to be more specific, that were approved of by the Washington, D.C. City Council and Mayor. And this is all following the George Floyd insanity, where we took one incident, one case, and then we acted like we've got to reform everything on the books all around the country. And now, criminals, violent in this case, are being locked up and let out in very short order. And that case where she said, where Jeanine Pirro, the U.S. attorney, said that a youth, a minor, can be found guilty of attempted murder via discharging a firearm at a fellow human being, which there is an actual case where this happened, she can't even touch the case. Unless the victim dies, the victim has to die before the U.S. attorney can touch the case per the city council ordinance or law. That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. And President Trump revealed that it's the 17 minus that are actually the ones committing a lot of these violent crimes, carjackings, shootings, assaults, etc. And once again, tell me the political re-election messaging that this aids. What does this help achieve? For are there political purposes tied up in this soft on crime agenda? Because this can't be a large voting block. I don't know what the draw is here. I don't know what the draw is. Unless we're woke, unless we fall victim to this Marxist talking point that America is racist, our systems are racist, we've got to reform it all, bring it all down to the ground, and rebuild it from scratch. If that's the talking point, then that's why they're doing what they're doing. Then it makes perfect sense. It absolutely makes perfect sense. But I'm not sure they believe that. Because behind closed doors, all the Democrats in Washington are talking about how this was so needed. This was very much needed. The reform, the legal reform, the criminal reform in Washington, D.C. Let's listen to one D.C. resident talking about how the juveniles are committing all the crimes and getting out the next day. This is going to be clip three.
These people here in D.C., all these mothers, children been killed in the streets by juveniles, being carjacked by juveniles.
The five girls who attacked Reggie Brown were all tried and found responsible as juveniles. Currently under DC law, juvenile offenders can only be held until they're 21, so the girls will all get out within the next few years. Israel says she wants DC crime penalties to be tougher so that juveniles who commit murder can be held for life.
Well, there you have it. That's a Washington, DC resident. Statistically speaking, she probably votes Democrat. Because 90 to 95% of the residents in D.C. vote Democrat. So there's a presumed Democrat talking about how Washington, D.C. has gone soft on the criminals. The juveniles are committing the crimes. They're getting let out. And we have to go harder from a prosecution standpoint on the juveniles. And this is really, I think this is a bipartisan issue. I'm talking about from a voter standpoint. Now, the Democrats, they're going to do their thing. They're going to say Trump is Hitler. They do this every day. Trump's, mean. He wants to lock up people, whatever their talking point is. He's for federalizing the police, whatever their talking point is going to be. But I'm talking about with the voters. Here's what I think's at play here. And here's what I think the opportunity is. Beyond simply making Washington, D.C. a better place to be and a better place to live, which in and of itself is a noble cause, a virtuous cause, we don't have to have political motivations behind every decision we make. And I think we need to warn against that. But I think here's where this could backfire against the Democrats. And maybe President Trump's thinking this. Who knows? I think we make Washington, D.C. a showcase that cleaning up our cities is possible. With the proper people, with the proper motivation, with the proper determination, I think this is case in point that America's inner cities can be cleaned up if people and elected officials have the willpower and the political motivation to get it done. I think this is going to happen. I think President Trump is going to clean up Washington, D.C. And this is our nation's capital. This is the The epicenter, this is where people come to get their first impression, many of them get their first impression of what is America? What's this America all about? And you go to all these capitals all around the world, and the government cares about their nation's capital. They care about keeping it clean. They care about keeping the crime down. They care about keeping their visitors safe. This is not hard stuff to comprehend here. But the Democrats want to scandalize every single thing that President Trump does. And all of a sudden, fixing America's inner cities is all of a sudden a scandal. And Democrats walk right into the trap, and now their political messaging is that we want D.C. to be dangerous, filthy, and full of homeless encampments. That's their talking point. And I just don't think that wins with voters. I don't think it wins with residents. I don't think it wins with voters. But setting all the political motivations aside, President Trump and his administration, are the end result is going to be a better place to live for D.C. residents, whether they're Democrat or Republican. And this is a beautiful thing about conservative, Republican, common sense, constitutional governing, is it is good for everybody. It is good for the Republican, the independent, the Democrat, whatever political, ideological category you want to drop yourself in. Conservative governance with limited government, constitutional values, a biblical understanding of human nature, and justice brings you to a place where everyone thrives and everyone has an opportunity to thrive. And that's the end point in all of this, is that what the Trump administration is doing is not partisan. It's not pandering to a certain voting bloc. This is making a city safer and cleaner and better for America's families. And that's what he's doing to Washington, D.C. And to the president's point, this is where people come to find out what's America all about. And right now, the impression they're getting is not reflective in a positive way of our country. All right, let's listen to another D.C. resident talking about how the crime is out of control. Once again, the local news outlets in Washington, D.C. have been covering this for years. They've got reel after reel after reel of murder, crime scenes, carjackings, residents that are furious. This is actually, I believe, this is, there was one clip, this may not be it, there was one clip that I watched of a police chief or a police lieutenant with the Metropolitan D.C. Police Department that was walking residents, kind of doing this public, you know, PR thing, walking residents around Washington, D.C., about talking about how safe it is now that you know, he's in charge. And they were all like, no, it's not safe. So they went on like a one-hour walking tour of the streets of Washington, D.C., talking about arguing with this police officer about how unsafe it is. And he was supposed to be pitching to them that this is, you know, the greatest city now. We've got it all cleaned up. And they were like, no, I saw a carjacking here right here last night on this street corner. Let's listen to clip 4.
If they're able to do that, then I think there's no problem with that, because there are pockets in D.C. that are significantly out of control. We have school zones that are drug-infested neighborhoods.
Mixed reaction from the community, but they all agree on one thing. Something must be done to decrease crime.
Okay, you want to know who that was? That was Washington, D.C. Advisory Neighborhood Commissioner Andrea Davis. Washington, D.C. Advisory Neighborhood Commissioner Andrea Davis saying in this clip, where the whole message of it is to go after President Trump and what he's doing, she says, well, you know, there are pockets in D.C. that are significantly out of control. She said, we have school zones that are drug-infested neighborhoods. Okay. So you're making the point that Washington, D.C. has major, major problems. And so just to put a bow on this, I think that at the end of the day, if President Trump is successful in cleaning up the streets of Washington, D.C., making it a safer place to live, a safer place to visit, I think it will turn the attention to America's inner cities and how Democrat politicians have the ability and the legal authority to clean up the inner cities and make them safer, but they don't have the will. Whether it's political or otherwise, they don't have the will, and thus they're not doing it, and thus we're all living in the midst of homeless encampments, drug-infested neighborhoods, and violent crime, out the wazoo. And so that's the message that I think is going to end up resonating should President Trump be successful with cleaning up Washington, D.C.'s inner cities. And just to wrap this up, here's Caroline Leavitt at the White House talking about what they're going to do with the homeless encampments. And I think America's cities can learn from this approach. Clip 5.
Homeless individuals will be given the option to leave their encampment, to be taken to a homeless shelter, to be offered addiction or mental health services, and if they refuse, they will be susceptible to fines or to jail time. Again, these are pre-existing laws that are already on the books. They have not been enforced, which is part of the reason for this federalizing of the National Guard to bring in this assistance for law enforcement. While we are targeting criminals and trying to remove criminals off of the streets, we also want to make D.C. safe and beautiful, and that involves removing mentally disturbed individuals and homeless encampments as well. So we will be using these regulations and code that already exists to clean up our streets, and we've already had great success.
The homeless encampments, this is something that most major cities deal with. And you've got permanent homeless individuals. Now, there are some mental health issues. There are some drug addiction issues, some substance abuse issues. But there's also, I've learned, just a lot of homeless people that they prefer the homeless lifestyle. And I've got examples of this where we've tried to help people, and they go back to the streets, not because they're forced back to the streets, but because they just can't come to grips with anything other than living in the streets. And so, but I think Americans deserve to have their streets cleaned up. This is not hard stuff. This is not controversial stuff. And so, look, the White House is saying if you're homeless and you're doing encampments and you're violating city ordinances and you refuse to comply, you're going to jail. We'll be back in a few.
Thoughts of the child you were carrying keep pouring over in your mind. A deep, unrelenting sadness overshadows your days, and you wonder if you will ever feel whole again. There is hope and healing from a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline, 866-482-LIFE, and talk with someone who has been where you are. Your call is confidential, and we will help you find healing. 866-482-LIFE.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today on the program. Well, I really almost regret talking about the midterms, but we're in August of 25 and the midterms are in November of 26. So we're just shy, just more than a year out, just a little more than a year out from the midterms of 2026. And I think that if Republicans are not careful, and I think if the Trump administration isn't careful, this could not go well in the midterms. The history of the midterms traditionally works against the administration, the current administration, the incumbency. And we saw during the last administration, Trump 1.0, we saw Nancy Pelosi take over in 2018, the House of Representatives. And we saw the impeachment saga, the persistent harassment by the House of Representatives, the stonewalling and the, you know, debating over spending levels and all of that. I just don't think that's good for the country. And it's right around the country, right around the corner. And so here are, I think, a couple things that are needed for Republicans to be positioned in the best manner possible. I think the first thing is that the Senate is going to have to fix the broken process of approving of the president's nominations. We talked about this on Monday with Philip Draghi. We've talked about it previously. President Trump's nominations are at a literal standstill in the Senate. Not an exaggeration. I'm not overstating it. President Trump has approaching 140 nominations that are completely stalled in the U.S. Senate. Well, why are they completely stalled? Well, they're completely stalled in part because the Senate just went on their August recess. They won't be back until after Labor Day. Nothing is getting done in Washington for the month of August. Secondly, and most importantly, Chuck Schumer is using every tool in his tool belt to block and stall all Trump nominations, not just a few, all Trump nominations. This is disheartening for the voting base that sent President Trump up there to staff the executive agencies with conservatives. And I don't, for the life of me, understand why this is not a bigger deal for the White House. I understand President Trump's put out a few things on Truth Social about it. All right, whatever. I don't think that's nearly enough outrage that this deserves. And so that's point number one. This is not going to look good for the Senate when they're campaigning in 2026 with all of these nominees held up. And then if you lose the Senate, well, you think we got problems now with Senate nominations getting held up. You let Chuck Schumer get back charge of the Senate. There won't be a single Trump nominee approved. I don't care what position they're in. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the spending. And I know that the traditional, you know, way to look at this is, well, both parties don't want to cut spending because they don't want to make the voters mad, right? They don't want to take anybody's money away. Well, I think there's a lot of voters, especially in the conservative camp, that are so fed up with the out-of-control spending. I mean, you look at the Tea Party and how popular that was. I mean, there's clearly a large segment of the voting base that, and even Democrats poll well on this, that don't like the wasteful spending. This is what made Doge so popular. And by the way, what happened to Doge? What happened to Doge? I know Musk isn't there anymore, but why aren't we hearing about Doge anymore? Just curious. And so I think if sufficient spending cuts are not enacted, which there's only going to be about one or two more shots at this before the midterms, I think that's disheartening. I think it is. I think it's disheartening for a presidency that was positioned to cut waste, fraud, and abuse from our federal budget. And then we get 2 years down the road to the midterms, and they're still spending the same amount of money they were spending before. Also, on the tariffs have been great for the president so far. Once again, this spiel is going to sound anti-Trump, negative Trump. That's not where I'm coming from here. I'm coming up just looking at it from a voter's perspective. The tariffs have been pretty good. I mean, they're bringing in tens of billions in tariff revenue. Inflation's been virtually unaffected by this. There's no clear cause and effect with tariffs on inflation, even though there was the doomsayers on that. But to me, this doesn't look good to bring in what's going to be estimated to be about $300, $350 billion in tariffs for the year. And Washington can't reduce its budget? So make this make sense. So we're going to spend the same or more than Biden spent as a federal government. And then on top of that, we're going to bring in about $300 billion in tariff revenue into the Treasury Department. And we don't even know what with the money. What are we going to do with the $350 billion? Because the debt and the deficit keep going up. So we're not paying off the debt with the money. So what are we doing with it? And so I don't think that looks good. I think if you're going to bring in the tariff revenue, which is clearly working, and you're sold on keeping the tariffs in place for strategic reshoring purposes of America's manufacturing base, you've got to use that $350 billion for something worthwhile. We've got to like make this money work. And I'm not suggesting rebates. I think that's a bad idea. President Trump, he touted it. Maybe we'll give rebates to the taxpayer. No, I think y'all just need to quit spending so much money. I don't need a rebate. I don't need a check. We already tried that. It got us the inflation that we have today. I think you guys just need to stop spending money at the rate that you're spending it. And so coming up on this next budget, this is going to be the last budget, or one of the last budgets, probably two, between now and the midterms in November of next year. And if Republicans are business as usual, big spending, bloated government, we don't want to cut any programs, I don't think that's going to be good. I don't think the voters are going to receive that well. The last point I'll make as far as Republicans positioning themselves well for the midterms, I think the deportation numbers are going to have to go up. This is something that really hasn't been talked about much, and the Trump administration stopped releasing the deportation numbers like 2 weeks into the administration. I think that's because the numbers were embarrassing. I really do. I really think they didn't want to release them because they were embarrassing. I think once the numbers come out, we're going to find out that there was no mass deportation. I may be wrong, and the MAGA crowd can throw things at me if they want. Unless something changes, when we get to the end of the fiscal year and the Trump administration, Department of Homeland Security releases the numbers, I think we're going to find out, once again, barring something changing, that there was no mass deportation. Folks, that's bad news. That's bad news. Not just politically, it's bad news for the country. And if the president had the ability and has the ability to deliver on any campaign promise, it's mass deportations. This is a 100% executive branch level responsibility. And what's baffling to me is that previous administrations, such as the Obama administration, President Obama was known as the deporter in chief. That's what they called him in the administration, the deporter in chief. President Obama deported millions. Over the course of his 8 years, I think it was close to 4 million illegal immigrants. And once again, the media had no problem with it. And that's why I don't want to hear anything from the media when I'm talking about this. Completely discredited. You're disqualified for talking about this. Because President Obama deported a record number by presidency of illegal immigrants, and nobody batted an eye. I didn't lose sleep over it. The media didn't lose sleep over it. Nobody lost sleep over it. Chuck Schumer didn't have a problem with it. Nancy Pelosi didn't have a problem with it. And so President Trump, they're going to have to step up the numbers. I don't know what is going on. I mean, this is bizarre. This is quite bizarre. And to give you some numbers, President Trump first month of the presidency, President Trump deported 37,660 individuals. President Biden had a monthly average of 57,000 removals. So do the math on that. That's over 500,000 a year. President Obama deported, 1.2 million just in the first 3 years. And in 1 year alone, he deported over 400,000. And so case in point here, if the mass deportations don't come to fruition, that is not good. Not good for our country. Not good for voters who sent President Trump to Washington, D.C. to take care of that. And I don't think we need to forget that, because this is not complicated. It's not controversial. The president has the full authority to deport illegal immigrants under his congressionally delegated authority. And according to the Trump administration, Biden let in, some say, 10 million or more illegal immigrants. And when you deport illegal immigrants at a mass scale, like Obama did, you open up and free American jobs for American citizens. You relieve emergency services resources from America's cities, where we're getting calls and traffic stops and insurance claims of illegal immigrants that don't have insurance. You're freeing up capacity in our welfare program, where we've got actual American citizens that need to qualify for assistance. You free that up. You take them off the voter rolls, which this is a case in California and New York and other places. They're giving them driver's license. Not only do they have a social security number, they're getting a driver's license. They can vote. Some of these metropolitan areas, once again, we go back to the Democrats being in charge. They're trying to pass ordinances, even though this is blatantly unconstitutional, but they're at least trying, and they're talking about passing specific voting ordinances in the cities to let illegals vote, just out in the open. And so there's a variety of issues that are resolved with proper deportation levels, but right now the Trump administration isn't there. They're not there. And I don't know what the holdup is. I mean, clearly the Democrats in the cities are stonewalling. They're not cooperating with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. I don't know whether this is a capacity issue. All I'm saying is the president campaigned on it. He has the legal authority to do it. They just passed the One Big Beautiful Bill to give more money and resources to have this done. Governor DeSantis says, I'm all on board. We've got Alligator Alcatraz. He's all on board. You've got nearly 30 or over 30 Republican governors fully on board with a mass deportation agenda. Tennessee governors cooperating. They're running raids, ICE raids in Tennessee. And so I think if we had to pick, what campaign promise is President Trump going to come out at the end of the year and say, I've accomplished, it's going to have to be the mass deportations. This is a bipartisan issue. It polls very well amongst Democrats and Republicans. It's good for our country. It's good for our citizens. It's good for the well-being of our nation, the integrity of our borders. It disincentivizes future illegal immigration. Mass deportations is a win, win, win for everybody in the room, realize it or not. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.